Ben Ratliff has been a jazz critic at the New York Times since 1996, where from 2004 through 2007, he put together a series of conversations with musicians called Listening With. Some of the artists featured included Sonny Rollins, Wayne Shorter, Diane Reeves, Pat Metheny, Ornette Coleman, Bradford Marsalis, Maria Schneider, among many others. Now those articles have been collected into a book called The Jazz Ear, Conversations Over Music. And with me now to discuss the book are Ben Ratliff and also Maria Schneider, who, as I said, is featured in the book. She's a two-time Grammy-winning composer and orchestra leader. What a pleasure it is to have you here. Ben, you say in your introduction that you were tired of writing about artists only when they had an album out to sell. Isn't that what a jazz critic usually does, go to clubs and review the latest releases?
Well, yeah, we review records. But, you know, I have this weird life where I go out and I hear music all the time. And I find that I have a great amount of sort of long-form patience to hear the musicians playing a long piece of music. It's much harder, you know, and I can sort of understand it. It's harder for me somehow to listen to records at home. It takes a lot more times to get it.
Because you're not a musician yourself? You can only know...
Well, I'm an amateur musician, but it's just that the, you know, records, a record is like a fixity, you know, and jazz... To me, as I understand it, jazz is all about development and change and revision. And, you know, the meaning of jazz is the fact that music sounds different at the Vanguard on Tuesday than it does on Sunday.
So, Maria, musicians have often told me that that's partly because there's a conversation going on, at least when the music is going well. With a big band, that's less likely because you already have arrangements. But isn't that true? I mean, somebody will suddenly hear something that the piano player is doing, the drummer is doing, and a whole other thing develops as a result.
Absolutely. The rhythm section is affecting each other. Even in the case of my band, when the written music is there, the way that they hear the rhythm section or the solo is going, it affects the way they play what they do, the way they phrase it, the volume that they play it. And also a big part of it, too, is... The audience affects the music, the proximity of the audience, the reaction of the audience. So there's so many levels of communication going on. And I always say making a record for a jazz musician is like taking a snapshot of a river. It looks like a river, but the essence of a river is movement and changeability. It's not a photograph.
So live music is still the most exciting way for musicians as well, not just for jazz critics?
Absolutely.
Well, there's also the, as you say, the audience plays a role, but are they part of the conversation? Every once in a while you do hear somebody in the audience chuckle over something that a musician has played, and I'm sure musicians appreciate that when they know that they've done something pretty good at that moment.
I've noticed over the years, if my band is playing in a hall that's where the audience is kind of set back or the lighting is such that you can't see the audience, the performance never has the same power as when you can see the audience because of the lighting being a certain way, or in a club when they're right next to the band. It's just, it's, and I don't know what it is. It's, you know what it is? It's like if I was talking in a room without you sitting there or having you sit there and speaking to you. You're communicating to somebody, and you see a response in their eyes, in their face, or whatever, and it makes you feel like you're not alone.
Well, this can work both ways. I remember when I was in college and I was the president of the jazz club because I was the only one who wasn't a musician in the group. The others all fought with each other. But whenever I express an opinion that somebody didn't agree with, they'd say to me, well, you're not a musician. You don't know what's really going on. And that was, you know, one-upmanship. But there's a certain amount of... There is a problem there. Musicians do hear the music differently. Is that what inspired you, Ben, to start talking to musicians about how they hear the music?
Well, my feeling is that musicians hear with a certain level of knowledge of craft and stuff, and they also hear out of a sense of ambition, and they hear out of maybe even a sense of survival. You know, it's what they do. But I think that the average person also tends to have pretty good ears. And the whole thing about the reason why live performances are a ritual that involve both the musicians and the performers is that, you know, we all have ears.
So what inspired you to come up with this this series, Listening With? Were you inspired initially by thinking about what the old downbeat blindfold test used to
be? Not particularly, no, because I feel that the blindfold test in downbeat has an element of fooled you. You didn't know what that was, and I got you to say something provocative.
You thought it was Clifford Brown. It was really Lee Morgan.
Yeah, no. My rules for doing these interviews were: the musician picks the music. It's got to be music that they respond to for some musical reason, something to do with melody or harmony or rhythm or momentum or touch or something like that. From there, the conversations went all over the place into personal things and also just to the basic question of what music is for. And I wanted to understand these musicians better than I had in the past.
Do musicians like to talk about their processes?
It depends.
Do you, Maria? When you're with other musicians, do you say... talk on a level that musicians would understand the same way that painters might talk about painting?
I enjoy talking about the process, but I also, part of talking about it is knowing that you're talking about something that can't easily be described. But I know many great musicians that can't talk about what they do.
They don't want to spoil it also. They don't want to over-intellectualize it.
I think there are some musicians that think that if they understand too much about what they do, or if they put it into words, they're going to lose their sort of naivete or their whatever comes very naturally.
I think maybe, I don't know if you agree, but, you know, like the last 30 years of jazz education, the jazz education movement has created musicians who are a lot more comfortable with talking about the mechanics and specifics of what they do, because they often are doing clinics and lectures and stuff, whereas, you know, an older generation of musicians didn't really talk that
right,
way.
Just play. Well, what did you tell the artists about the music that they could choose for their interviews?
Just that it had to be things that they had not played on, and that it could be absolutely anything.
So it didn't have to be jazz?
Not at all, no.
Were you surprised by some of the things that they chose?
Yeah, with everybody I was surprised, at least by something. Ornette Coleman chose this cantor, Joseph Rosenblatt.
Yesolo Rosenblatt.
Yeah.
He also picked somebody from Kyrgyzstan, didn't he?
Actually, that was me.
Oh.
There were a couple of exceptions in the book where the musicians were very, very reluctant to choose pieces of music. Ornette chose the Joseph Rosenblatt, but beyond that, I kind of had to talk to him about what issues he wanted to talk about, and then we found some pieces to play.
Well, he was very influenced by Charlie Parker, obviously. So do you decide to play Charlie Parker so he could talk about that?
I said, please, let's listen to some Charlie Parker. And we talked about a couple of pieces.
And Maria, how did you select the songs? You were less reluctant to choose pieces, I imagine.
I just picked music that I loved, and I tried not to think about music that I thought other people would find interesting or connect to my music somehow. I just tried to pick things that I really liked. And the fifth one that I chose was Up, Up, and Away by Jimmy Webb. And my sister said to me, you can't say that for a New York Times interview. And I said, but I really love Jimmy Webb so much. You know, I know it's very different from what I do in some respect, but in a very deep respect, it's very similar.
But the other pieces... people might have expected from you something from Ravel, Gil Evans with Miles Davis, a piece by the Brazilian artist Vela Guarda de Portela. Mm-hmm. Forgive my Portuguese.
That's right.
And Up, Up, and Away. So, but everybody grew up with pop music, and I suspect that influenced you when you were young.
Yeah, you know, that was music that I listened to playing in my dollhouse. I think, you know, it was like the fabric of my life was that music, and it has an element of motion in it that plays very much into what I do now.
Well, when you were talking about it, did you realize things that you might not have realized if you weren't talking with someone like Ben?
Yeah, because all of a sudden you're realizing certain analogies. He said something about because my father flew a small plane, and he made I don't know, you made some point about...
Well, earlier you'd been talking about how you actually used to go in the plane with your father.
Up and away.
Flew a small plane. And that's an amazing little biographical detail. And you had also been talking a lot about these upward modulations in the song that you loved. So...
And the sense of motion and flying.
Sense of motion.
And that a lot of my music is about flying. Everything from a piece I wrote called Hang Gliding to Sailing, which is about motion. And I think a lot of that in the love of modulation and also orchestration came from that pop music.
My guests are Maria Schneider, one of the people who Ben Ratliff talked to for his series in the New York Times called Listening With, now collected in a book called The Jazz Ear, Conversations Over Music, published by Times Books. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Ben Ratliff, who's been a jazz critic at the New York Times since 1996. He's been here before to talk about books that he's written, like Coltrane, The Story of a Sound. He also put together the New York Times Essential Library on Jazz. And his latest is The Jazz Ear, Conversations Over Music, which is published by Times Books. And one of the musicians he talked to was Maria Schneider, who is also here. We're talking about how musicians listen to music and how other people listen to jazz, and I would assume that audiences have a wide range of knowledge. Some probably are quite sophisticated and know a lot about jazz, so they'll understand what's really going on, and others are just there because they love the energy.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been your experience? What happens when you talk to listeners, to people in the audience?
I think people really hear what's going on. I think maybe they can't articulate it, but you know, the repetition and the development and all the things that as a composer I do to make everything in the music feel inevitable are felt on a deep level by people. And if you lose a track of an idea or whatever, you lose the audience.
And music is motion, right? So it's always revealing itself by degrees. The musician is there, the audience is there, and they're sort of experiencing something together through time. That's what makes it great. That's what makes it different.
So the audience
from looking
is not just an eavesdropper?
An eavesdropper? No.
In a conversation between musicians?
No, I don't think so at all. I think they're part of it.
Maria, you told Ben that going to Brazil changed the way that you think about music.
Yeah.
Before then, you came out of a tradition, Gil Evans and other arrangers, who were so important in, I guess, during your formative years. Hadn't you even worked with Gil Evans?
Yeah, I did work with Gil for 3 years. Yeah, I think my music was more aggressive. It was darker. The modes, the basic tonality of the music was much more intense. And then I went to Brazil, and I discovered the joy in the music, you know, and music that's coming out of people that largely are really suffering, you know, a lot of poor people that are making beautiful music. And I think the thing that affected me most is that in Brazil, music is sustenance for life. It's necessary.
Since we're talking about sustenance, how do you maintain a 17-piece orchestra in rough times?
Well, you know, that's been a labor of love for many years. And, you know, I've spent just about every hour of my day, every day, you know, working and sometimes, you know, doing clinics and guest appearances with other groups and funding my own orchestra.
For 14 years now. That's incredible. Yeah. You've also used the internet to invite listeners into your process because that's the way you're going to connect with younger listeners?
It's been the idea created by a company called Artistshare, and the idea that you connect with your audience and you get people to participate in the making of the recording, so that the music is really kind of created by the support of the fans. And I, as an artist, really feel that. And it sets the bar even higher, because these people are putting forth money ahead of making a project in their belief that the music will be good.
Ben, did you feel that you learned new things about records you were already familiar with through these conversations with musicians?
Yeah, if only through their understanding of it.
Because they could give you insights that you might not have had otherwise?
Sure. I mean, for example, one of the pieces Maria chose to talk about was the first track of Sketches of Spain, the Miles Davis record, Concierto de Aranjuez. And she talked about it in terms of how everything is always moving. Like each, it's like a network of little lines that feed into each other. And every single line is sort of always going somewhere and developing and leading you to something else. It's a beautiful piece of music that you can quite easily listen to without thinking much of anything at all. But, you know, if you can focus on a detail through a musician's hearing, I think it's you do learn something.
We have very little time, but I wonder why you discontinued the series.
Well, it had been running for a few years, and I had this feeling that it was time for readers to get used to it not being there anymore.
Well, I miss it anyway, Ben. I wish you would bring it back, even if as an occasional series.
Thank you.
Ben Ratliff will be interviewing Gal Costa and Cassandra Wilson about the music that's mattered most to them on January 11th at the Times Center. For details, go to our show page at WNYC.org. His book, The Jazz Ear, Conversations Over Music, published by Times Books. Thank you so much, Ben, and thank you, Maria Schneider, one of my favorite musicians. Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
Thanks.